Welcome to episode 10 of Film 45. This past weekend, I spent time with the co-presenters and the attendees of the MSP Doc Summit. We had a great time there, shared a lot of knowledge, learned a lot of stuff, did a lot of networking, and then we had a great conversation with Jan Selby from Quiet Island Films, and perhaps you've heard about her doc, Beyond the Divide, coming soon to TV, and we're going to find out more about her business and her film career.
You're listening to Film 45.
All right. Welcome to Film 45, Jan Selby. Now, Jan Selby is mainly a documentary filmmaker, and I met her years ago, I think via Docu Club, probably through the infamous Melody Gilbert connector of all things, it seems like. And I've been following Jan's career and her business, and we hang out together at film festivals sometime, and she's a dynamic business person, and I think you should all meet her. Welcome to the show, Jan.
Thank you, Jeremy.
All right. Well, this is just kind of how it works here. We're at the Documentary Summit, the Minneapolis-St. Paul Documentary Summit, day one, and we're in the cafeteria of MCAD, and there is literally nobody here except us. So, yeah, we just thought we'd have this chat while we were face-to-face here instead of doing it over Skype. But I'll do an interview any way possible. So Jan, why don't you tell our listeners a brief bio? Where did you come from, and how did you end up where you are today with Quiet Island Films?
Okay, my life story briefly. In college, I wanted to be a documentary filmmaker, and I think that was inspired probably by my only exposure to anything even at all like documentary film was Jacques Cousteau on television while I was growing up, and I loved watching Jacques Cousteau. So somewhere along the way in college, I thought I'd love to be a documentary filmmaker, but I had no idea how to get there. I ended up being a philosophy major. There wasn't a film degree at my school. It was a liberal arts school, but I did take experimental filmmaking, which was really fun. And
so clearly you were motivated by money.
Oh, definitely. Yes, clearly I was very practical, right? Yeah. So I do remember for one class being able to sit on the floor of my dorm room and splicing film, and in a very strange way, loving it. Like, just loving it like I'd never done anything like that, and could spend hours in the zone of splicing film. That is a hint at maybe my age too. So anyway, when I told a few people, specifically parents, that I wanted to be a documentary filmmaker, I'm sure you can imagine they love me very much, but wanted me to be able to make a living. And let's just say there wasn't a lot of understanding or support there. So to get back at them, I majored in philosophy.
Okay. Yeah. As you do.
Yes. No, so I just did philosophy because it was the only topic I thought in college that really forced me to think for myself. And at the time, I just loved it. And the reading and the writing and thinking was really stimulating intellectually to me. So then when it was time to get a job, I thought, well, I like business. I like kind of psychology, thinking about how people think, what motivates them, and I loved creative things like photography. And part of the reason I like business was because I happened to grow up in a family where both my parents had their own businesses. And I never appreciated that at the time. Like, you never really appreciate what you are surrounded by as a child. But over the years, I realized that was an incredible gift to be exposed to that and have it be so normal to be an entrepreneur. So anyway, when I thought about those things, I thought, marketing is a place where they all come together, business, psychology, and creativity. So I had a first job in Boston at an ad agency. At the time, I thought I wanted to be a copywriter. And it was a small agency. I got to do a lot of different things and realized that I was just kind of a okay copywriter, like a B-plus copywriter. But I really got into the strategy and the planning, and I discovered I was good with account management and people, and I loved learning about different industries. So I went into account work for a few years. I had a great boss who inspired me, and actually, for the first 6 months of that job, he pulled a desk into his office and said, just sit here, and every day I want you to listen, and I'm going to give you projects, and anytime you want, you can ask me about what's going on and what I'm doing. And I also now appreciate how incredible that was as a gift. He was a very great, smart guy.
Yeah, that's unusual and very fortuitous to have that kind of access.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, really. And it's really influenced who I am as a boss now. So I spent a few years in Boston working in the advertising world, and then moved to California and worked at Apple Computer and was there as a marketing specialist, pretty much responsible for marketing communications for product launches. I was on a top secret product, so that was fun. And then over the years,
So as an Apple geek, I really want to know, so I'm going to interrupt you. Which top secret product was it?
It was the Apple IIc.
Oh, the color. Yeah.
It was supposed to be the first portable computer, which is hysterical now because it had a handle on the back of it. And it was the first consumer-focused Apple product. It actually had packaging the box with the red box with a woman on it. I don't know if you remember that, but...
No, I don't.
Wait,
so the 2C was just a rectangular slab, right? With a pull-out handle on the back?
Well, kind of, but it actually, this handle on the back was supposed to be a little stand, so it was kind of a slight triangle shape of the body of the computer. Mm. And it had a monitor that went on top of it that was ridiculous now because it was a small rectangle you could barely see.
Yeah.
But it made it portable. So in theory, it's really silly because portable at the time meant actually that there would be a handle that you could carry it around.
But it was 30 pounds.
Yes. And who would carry a computer around by a little handle on the back? But it was a really exciting time actually in the industry because when I was at Apple for 3 years. When I came there, Steve Jobs was the president. And during my time there, John Sculley came in. While I was there, Steve Jobs left. And while I was there, the first Mac came out. And I remember we each got a Mac as an employee, and they had 512K memory.
Yeah.
This really dates me, but I also remember the first spreadsheet, Lotus 1-2-3. And that was like a game changer.
Yeah.
So a lot of, I had that techie background.
I knew you worked at Apple, but that's cool. You were there during those, I don't know, really transitional years to the graphical operating system and the Mac and what it's become. I mean, mm-hmm. the juggernaut it's become, really. That's cool. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, we can geek out more about Mac stuff
later.
We
can. I'll tell you the most important thing is I wish I had kept my stock. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God. Yes. Seriously, I would not be talking to you. You'd own an island or something.
I know, but I would have missed meeting you or being a filmmaker, maybe. So I'm glad I don't have it in some ways.
Yeah.
But I might be on a beach someplace, right?
Yeah. Okay, so after Apple?
After Apple, I balanced in my life a lot of independent consulting work as a way to work and be with my kids as I had children. So I went in and out of working in corporate environments or working part-time for myself. So I started my own marketing consulting company after that, and Apple became a client, which was wonderful. And then I moved to the Twin Cities and started working in the medical device industry in marketing. And then spent a long time working in the medical device industry. And in between there, I worked for many different companies, some consumer products, lots of different things. And in 2007, I believe, I had enough with that life. I was really burned out, really deeply burned out, and I remember putting a little note on my computer that said, just because you're good at something doesn't mean you have to do it.
That's great advice.
Yeah, it's particularly hard when you're making money doing it, too, but...
Do you feel a little trapped, perhaps, right? Or not? What did you feel about that?
To be honest, more than anything, the desire to become a documentary filmmaker over all these years kept growing inside of me. When I would be exposed to a video project in a corporate world, which I was, I had those kind of projects a few times, I just was wanted to do that more than I wanted to do anything else. There was something about it that spoke to me like it was something I was supposed to be doing. I was very drawn to it. And so finally it became, this is actually pretty rational, and I think relatively rational in other parts of my life, but this is one of the most irrational things I've ever done, and one of the best things I've ever done also. I just had to, there was like no question, I had to try being a documentary filmmaker. And I had no experience, but I had a consulting company with about, I don't know, 8 or 10 people working for me, and I had saved some money, and I closed the company down and helped everyone find a job. And I went to the IFP Producers Conference in the early part, I think, of 2007. And that was the beginning. And I met Melody there, Melody Gilbert. I met many other people there. And she and I formed a friendship and talked over the summer. And one thing led to another. And we started a company that fall called Darn Good Documentaries. And we had a company for 3 years together. I think it was 3 years. And, you know, I brought a lot of business experience. And, of course, she's an accomplished, incredible filmmaker and storyteller. And we did a lot of, I think, pretty good work together. We were pretty proud of it. And then we both just wanted different things. So we decided to do our own thing. And Melody went to teach in Bulgaria. And I started Quiet Island Films. And so now Quiet Island Films is a relatively small, but hopefully with a big
but growing
imprint. Yeah, I like it relatively small. You know, I'm not somebody who wants to have a company with 50 people.
Yeah.
But there are 5 of us, and we do corporate and nonprofit video production. We've done TV commercials, things that are doc style, things that are not doc style too. When I was doing marketing consulting, I was involved in creative concepting and writing a lot, so I bring that stuff to the party. And at the same time, I'm making films. Makes me very excited to say that, and it's still somewhat hard to believe.
Well, I've seen your output, and you have a knack for it, so I'm glad you listened to that strong urge over the years. It's interesting, you know, how many disparate skill sets you have and are bringing to filmmaking. And I just think, you know, it's unfair for everybody else, basically.
Oh, I don't think I'd say that, but I do believe that everybody has their own point of view and way of telling stories. And so it's such a personal journey.
Yeah. And you know, we mentioned Melody a couple of times, and she is a great connector. And, I'm curious to see, you know, what other stuff you guys would have made together as Darn Good Docs. But also, you know, if that partnership ran its course, then, you know, that's fine. I mean, now you have Quiet Island Films and you're making stuff there. You're 5 people now. I know you just went through a hiring phase, and congrats on the growth. That's awesome. Before we talk about your film projects specifically, what kind of thing gets you excited about the corporate kind of work that you do? What is it? Is it helping tell the story visually, or do you respond to just things that strike your fancy? You know, like, I guess sometimes when projects come in my lap, I will say yes or no to them just based on my own curiosity about the subject matter. Mm-hmm. But I guess what's your passion for the commercial world? What gets you up in the morning and excited to do this every day as a business owner?
I think I love how every project gives me an opportunity to learn. I really, really love what I do, and I think in this field it's amazing every day to be learning something, either to be learning about a new market or product or service or business model. I mean, there's just so much out there. And who has time to read as much as we want, you know? So it's a great way to actually be a hands-on learner. I think through my years in marketing, and particularly in the medical device industry, I developed a skill to learn about things quickly. I don't really have a technical mind, I would say, but I learned, for example, I was in the cardiac device industry, and I learned how to discern what it was important to know to be able to communicate about something and what I didn't know, and how to feel really comfortable not having to know everything, to know who I could talk to make sure that I understood things in the right way. But I think in some ways, being from the outside helps you understand how to communicate about something because you're learning about it in a fresh way. So that's something I really enjoy working with clients in partnership to understand what they want to communicate to whom. And that's where my, I think, marketing communication strategic thinking comes in. I mean, I automatically go to what is the goal here? What do we want to not just accomplish communicating, but often, you know, clients, as I'm sure you know, get very focused on what they want to say about their company and their product. Mm-hmm. And we know that what resonates most is not people just talking about themselves, but something that makes it engaging and of interest to the audience. And clients really appreciate that if you can get into understanding what they want to communicate and help them take it further in a way that it's not just them putting messages out there, but having them be received in the way that they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By understanding their audience and what their audience already knows or perceives or doesn't know. That kind of thinking I find really challenging, and so that creates opportunities for creativity, how to approach this in a way to accomplish that objective. And I love, I'm always learning being a producer and director. When I'm with DPs, I like to ask about cameras or, you know, when we're lighting stuff, audio. I'll never know as much as they do, the people that I hire, but I think over time, the more I learn, the better I am at being a producer and director.
Right, because you know what to look for, what to ask about. If it's not in your wheelhouse, at least, yeah, we've talked about this on this show a little bit. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, you need to know a little bit about everything so you feel comfortable asking for things and saying, well, I need you to do this. I know we can get this. I don't know how you do it, but I know it's possible, so make it happen for us. You know, how you yes. can... order the things you need, not in a dictatorly fashion, mm-hmm. but how you can just be explicit and get the end result you want as a director or a producer.
Exactly. Yeah. You're sharing your vision and working with your team mm-hmm. who you trust to say, this is what I want to accomplish. Here's what I'm thinking. If you have a better idea, please tell me. Yeah. Or how can we accomplish this? And let's brainstorm together. Yeah, and I think what's really come in handy is all those years in the corporate environment, I really, really can relate to the pressures that my clients are under often in their environments. And I think that builds a relationship of trust because I'm not just someone from the outside who's bringing in expertise about video and or TV commercials or whatever it may be, but I am really understanding, you know, in that world, one major screw up and a career of decades really could be damaged heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really love the way many corporate environments, I think, are managed through fear and other things like that. But I do understand the risk that people take when they hire you and that how critically important it is that you know, my goal is always to not only deliver what they're looking for, but to exceed their expectations and make them look incredibly good to whoever they have to look good for.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I mean, I think that's probably not a very common realization that filmmakers have when they're hired is the fear and risk in that corporate world. Because oftentimes, as creatives, we maybe don't live in that stew, that mix, on a day-to-day basis. You know, we're like artsy fartsy doing whatever we do, you know, sometimes. And so that's a good perspective to have and to keep in mind that, for them, it's a really big deal that they're working with you, probably, especially mm-hmm. if it's a new client and if they've never done video projects before. I mean, they're probably really going out on a limb. So yeah, that's interesting. And I personally will think a lot more about that.
Can I add a follow-up to that too?
Sure.
Part of exceeding their expectations is when someone comes to you, I'm sure you've had this experience and many listeners have, and they say they want something, and you know when you listen to what they want, that there's no way they really don't want that.
Yeah.
You know, they say, I want a 20-minute video about this. And you're thinking...
And it has to go viral.
Exactly. It has to go viral. Exactly. And the challenge is to not say to them, you're crazy, mm-hmm. but to actually spend time listening to what they want to accomplish and then develop the trust. So you can say, I hear what you want to accomplish and what you need to do. And would you consider other ways to do this? Because I think you'll achieve your objectives better if we create 5 2-minute videos, for example,
without instead of a 20
promising
minute, yeah.
it going viral. But right, instead of a 20-minute video, or how is it going to be used? And I like to think ahead of time with them about, okay, this is your short-term need, but let's talk about how this might be able to be used over the next year. And if we think about that, we can make the investment in this pay off because it could be used in many ways. So a lot of it is ultimately they'll be happier if you spend that time up front, not just doing what they ask for, but understanding what they want to accomplish.
Yes. Yeah. We could talk about this all day, but I want to talk about your film projects.
Okay.
And I'm talking about creative doc projects, mm-hmm. For the listeners. And so, am I accurate in remembering that the Peace Sign short doc you did was your first kind of creative piece?
That was. So I was the producer on Melody's film, Fritz the Walter Mondale Story.
Yes.
But you know, I wasn't involved in the creative on that, even though I learned a lot from that experience. And my first film as director was a short doc about the history of the peace symbol in 2010.
Yeah. And what was the runtime on that? Remind me.
10 minutes.
10 minutes.
And I pretty much edited it myself. Had a little help here and there. I was proud of it for my first film. And just like any creative person, I look back and think, whoa. But, you know, artists have told me, you know, we all create what we can create when we're creating it. And then hopefully we do look back and say, I've learned and grown a lot. So I can say, yes. I do have that experience.
Yes. And I think you maybe workshopped it a little bit through DocuClub. I know that's where I saw it. I don't think I saw it at a festival.
I'm not sure if I workshopped it then. I might have.
Might
I don't
have
really remember.
There.
I might have just shown
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That might be the case.
But I did, you know what I did? And, I asked a group of people to come. Maybe this was, I'm not sure if you were part of this or not. It was a long time ago, but anyway, so I asked maybe 8 people to come in and critique it at one point. That was really valuable because I remember I asked them to be really honest. And at that film, that film was relatively boring. And one of the best ideas that came out of that group was to go out and do some man on the street discussions with people about what peace, the peace symbol or peace means to them. And that really made that little film, I think, a lot more interesting. And I just went in front of Dunn Brothers on Grand Avenue in St. Paul and, you know, shot it myself with a little, I don't even know what I had then. Anyway, maybe a Vixia, can of Vixia.
Yeah.
So,
it's a really sweet little film. And,
Thank you.
And then suddenly here you were making a feature not too long after that. And now that it had a different title originally when you first started it, and also a similar topic related to peace. It was called mm-hmm. 9 Pieces of Peace.
Is that the title?
Yeah. So when you were developing it, it was 9 Pieces of Peace, and it was a story about a peace sign in Montana?
Missoula, Montana.
Missoula. And, okay, so I'm just going to do my crap job of summarizing here. So in Missoula, there was a giant telephone reflector tower up on the hillside, and someone painted a peace sign on it, and various opinions were held pro and con over the years in the community, and eventually it came down, and you were like, oh, this historic sign, this is interesting, I'm going to follow it, learn more about it, and they divided up into 9 pieces, and those pieces are still around. Mm-hmm. And so that's how you got interested in this project, but that's not the movie you made.
Right.
So, and what's the new movie called?
So it's Beyond the Divide. And when I thought I was done filming for 9 Pieces of Peace, all of a sudden, 2 of the main characters started interacting in a way that I felt was very powerful. And I had a sense that I needed to keep filming. And my DP lives in Missoula, so I was lucky because by then I was pretty much out of money. And so I couldn't afford to get there for some things that were happening, but he was there. And so we filmed for another year. And then I knew because of the events that happened that I had enough. And the film became ultimately about the same message that I wanted to communicate initially, which was the importance of listening to each other with compassion and respect. And my original vision was 9 Pieces of Peace could be a film that would inspire people to engage in conversations where a different kind of listening would happen, and compassionate listening, let's say. And what happened in Beyond the Divide, what became Beyond the Divide, were 2 people being incredible role models for finding common ground. And the main characters are a Vietnam veteran and a peace advocate. It was an incredible personal journey and creative journey. I learned a lot. And I finished it in 2014 with the help of my amazing editor, Bill Kersey, my amazing composer, Chris Koza, and my DP, Elgin Smith from Missoula. I had many, many other people on the Quiet on Films team over the years, and others who over time made small donations that allowed it to come together.
It's an incredibly moving film. It's powerful. When I saw that you did a title change, I didn't know why. I didn't understand what had happened. I knew you were making your film about the peace signs, the pieces that were left, and how the community, how it affected people and how they talked about it, both pro and con. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm changing the title to Beyond the Divide. And I was like, I don't know why you're doing this, Jan. This seems really weird. But then I guess when I was able to see the footage and how different it was and how powerful it was, I was really blown away. And really everyone who worked on this, I mean, it's very apparent that they brought their passion and their top skills to it, because it's just incredibly solid. It's satisfying to a viewer. And it shows this journey, this transformation that these 2 people go through that on the surface you wouldn't think is likely or maybe even possible. And it's, you guys all just need to see Beyond the Divide. It's really well done, and it's your first feature length project, and you knocked it out of the park. So it's great.
I can tell you, just last week I learned that it's going to be on TPT this fall.
Awesome.
The 1-hour version, I wish it was the longer version, but I still love the 1-hour version. Bill did a nice job of bringing it down. But on November 9th, and that's important because Veterans Day, Armistice Day, is November 11th. Mm-hmm. And I never had been to a Veterans Day ceremony ever before making this film.
Oh, wow.
Have you been to one
yes,
before?
Yes.
And so this film is appropriate to show during the week of Veterans Day. And some people who see it may, who have never been to a Veterans Day ceremony, after seeing it on that, I think it's a whatever, Tuesday night, I think, but whatever November 9th is, may choose to go to a Veterans Day ceremony on the 11th if they hadn't before.
I would hope so.
Yeah, I would too.
Because I haven't been to one in a long stretch of years. I remember because I was in band in high school, we would perform at different events like that around our small community, Memorial Day, Veterans Day, things like that. But certainly nothing for me recently. And I do feel like your film has made me rethink that and made me think my own lack of time spent even dwelling about it, because I have complicated feelings about it. I'm mainly a pacifist, but I understand the sacrifices people have made. But you bring a humanity to it. You make it more real instead of abstract, I guess, is for me. When I saw it, I was like, wow, you know, this one man, this one woman, they were able to have this thing happen, and it is inspiring. I think you will inspire a lot of people to revisit their thoughts about it and their, maybe not commitment, but, you know, to do something active, to go, to take part, to start a conversation with somebody maybe they know in their neighborhood or their town that maybe they haven't talked to them for a long time on either side of the issue. So it's incredible. Yeah. Oh,
thank you. I think for me, it created new possibilities that I could choose to go to a Veterans Day ceremony and honor the sacrifices and the people, not the abstract concept of soldiers or veterans, but people who made choices, even if I may not have agreed with those choices, to still be able to honor their service. And by going, it doesn't mean that I am supportive of war.
Right.
And it's that gray zone that often it's easier to avoid, but by going into that gray zone or the divide, that's where the possibility of understanding each other lies. And to me, this film has the potential for viewers to think about the gray zone in many areas. It's really not just limited to the topic in this film, which is the relationship between a Vietnam veteran and a peace advocate.
Yeah.
It's really about...
Yeah, it could inspire people to forgiveness, to openness in many things, and, you know, maybe just personal relations or right. violence against, you know, other people.
Race is such a tricky issue for all of us. Politics, I mean, I'm the first to admit I don't search out situations where people believe really differently than I do politically, but I also know I don't like the direction that we are going in as a country, where people tend to not talk about things because we stay among those who think the way we do.
Right. Yeah, it's either you're for or against, and there's no middle ground anymore.
And it's easy that way, but it doesn't, in the long run, it's not going to get us to a good place.
No. Okay, so I like to keep all these episodes as close to, you know, a half hour as possible, so they're easily digestible.
Where are we
at? And we're already there, seems like we just started a second ago.
I have one other thing I have to mention.
Okay, go ahead.
Just quickly, I have another film that's in production. I have to mention that.
All right. This is great. So, okay. All right. What is it?
And I'll just brief. It's a film about the transformative power of Montessori education. I've been working on it for a few years. I have a co-director, co-producer, Vina Kay. And people, I should say, can learn about my other film at beyondthedividefilm.com. And this new one, the working title is Building the Pink Tower. I know the title will change eventually, but that means a lot within the Montessori community. And the website is buildingthepinktower.org if people want to learn more.
I will have all of Jan's pertinent links in the show notes. So just check that out in whatever
thank you.
Podcast player you listen to. So the question I always throw out to everybody at the end is just kind of, what's your opinion on the state of filmmaking in Minnesota? Is it anything good or bad, or any you know, thing you want to call out to someone's attention, or just your thoughts on being a filmmaker living and working in Minnesota? What do you think our future holds for us?
Well, I don't bring decades of experience as a filmmaker, so I can't compare it to the way it used to be. But I can say that as an independent filmmaker who is self-taught, I found incredible support and generosity from a knowledge perspective and support perspective among other filmmakers and in the production community. I couldn't have made, for example, Beyond the Divide without the help of people that are in the film community and the larger production community who would like to be part of the filmmaking world as a change from what they do on corporate projects. But it's amazing to me. I think in the few years I've been involved in independent filmmaking in the Twin Cities, it seems that it's accelerated. The amount of people working on films and the number of films that are being worked on, I think that I wish there were more grant opportunities, but it's great to have the few we do have. And it's a very nurturing community. I really celebrate when fellow filmmakers are doing well, and I think it's wonderful to have that experience. You know, what's that line about, you raise the level of the water and all the boats float higher?
Yes, I'm a firm believer in that.
Yes, and I feel like that's been really my experience, and I'm really optimistic about the great work that's coming out of the Twin Cities.
Awesome. Okay, so we have your websites. Quiet Island Films
Quiet website Films or Twitter, dot Facebook? Com and is my company site, you know. Okay. There's an at Beyond the Divide. I'm not great at this, is why someone who works for me, Kelly, helps me with this.
You can't do everything, Jan.
I know I can't. There's
we all
at
need
Jan
to realize
Selby,
that.
At Beyond the Divide. There's a Pink Tower, and I can just put out my email, and if people,
well, we can just put the links to the websites and the social media.
I'll look it up, and we'll have it on the website. And it's great. We do Facebook and Twitter, and thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad you're on. Thank you, and thanks for sharing the information about your new project. And keep your calendar open for November 9th, I guess, for the TPT broadcast, because it'll be worth watching. I've already seen it, so I guarantee you it's worth watching.
And I can also mention, because I know you have people in different areas that listen, the Driftless Film Festival is in, I believe, early November outside of Madison, and the film's going to be there too. And I think I'm going to be there.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And what are you winding down the festival life of that film?
Yes. Yeah. It premiered at the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival in Missoula in February 2014. So I'm now moving towards looking at broadcast opportunities and the education market. And there's a lot of interest among, you know, faith-based organizations. Oh, actually, can I mention one other thing?
Of course.
St. Catherine's University has a Wisdom Ways program there that's about spirituality in a broad sense. And there's an event on Saturday, October 25th there. And I'm going to be there, and they're showing the film. And there are other people in the community who are going to be talking about some really interesting conversations, I think, that the film brings up. Mm-hmm. So that's another opportunity for people in the Twin Cities to see the film.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for, I don't know. Who thought a filmmaker from Minnesota would tell a Missoula story that can change the world? I really believe it can, and hopefully continues to do so.
Thank you so much, Jeremy.
All right.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jan. And all you listeners out there, maybe we'll see you at one of Jan's events or the IFP new open house coming up in August, producers conference, stuff like that. So stay out there, stay active, help each other out, and we'll talk to you next time. All right, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Jan. I had a great time recording it. I always have fun hanging out with Jan.
you will too next time you meet her, see her at a festival, etc. So check out her websites, follow her films. They are good stuff. Remember to direct your feedback and suggestions to us over at film45.org. That's film45.org. We appreciate word of mouth. Tell your friends about Film 45. Give us a rating over on iTunes. And as always, our theme music is by Chooch.
This has been a Film 45 podcast.